Fred Young sitting in, and I was reading this week about, we just passed the 2-year anniversary for the James Webb Space Telescope, and I wanted to reach out to a guy who's become a friend of mine. I've reached out to him over the years on my Wednesday night show on At Your Service. His name is Dr. Ryan Ogliori. He's an astrophysicist at Washington University. Dr. Ogliori, it's great to talk to you again, sir.
Yes, great to be back. Thank you.
You do a fantastic job because I've talked to people that know a lot about science-y issues, and yet they're not very relatable. You are, and that's why I wanted to talk to you, and I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule today, because just this week I was reading that the James Webb Space Telescope captured a detailed image of a pair of galaxies that were colliding 465 million light years from Earth, and I wanted to reach out to you since we've just passed this 2-year anniversary, and just to ask, in case people, you know, they read this, they don't know obviously much about the James Webb Space Telescope, how is it different from, say, the Hubble Space Telescope?
Yeah, James Webb is different primarily because it looks in different wavelengths of light, so different colors, if you will, and it's looking in really, really red, so red that we can't see it. It's called the infrared. And this part of light, of the electromagnetic spectrum, is very important because it's where gas molecules vibrate. It's kind of where they dance, if you will, and where dust kind of glows. And in this regime, we can see chemistry. So we can see space chemistry. And that's why I'm super excited about James Webb, is that it can probe the parts of the universe that are invisible to Hubble, because Hubble can't go to those lower energies, those longer wavelengths, where gas molecules and dust particles become visible.
So it's not really a competitor, if you will, to Hubble, but it's a companion, because they're looking at different spectrums of light. Is that fair to say?
That's right. And different physics happens in different spectra. And down here, we get into chemistry of molecules and rocks. You get into geology. You go to X-rays, to higher energy, and you look at different types of events. And so you're probing really different events in the universe and in the solar system.
But it also, when you're probing these different events, doesn't it also, even if you're looking at an event that might be something that Hubble could see, when James Webb looks at these events, it might see details and information that is vastly different than what Hubble could pick up.
That's right. Yeah. And so with these colliding galaxies, like it's a super cool picture. Everybody should go look at it. It kind of looks like a smiley face. So what we're seeing is like a lot of the dust, like organic rich dust and gases that are involved in this collision. And we're seeing what's happening with that stuff. It gets dispersed, it gets concentrated. And the important thing is that feeds into stars forming. And so when these galaxies collide, it's unimaginably big scale, right? And it either depletes or enriches the regions where stars form. And so you can make stars, and we know that half these stars have planets. And so this affects everything, the kind of life cycle of stars, formation of planets, and everything.
And when we are seeing this information coming from 465 million light years from Earth, aren't we, in essence, using a time machine to see backwards in time?
That's right. Yeah. And that's what Einstein taught us, is space and time are fundamentally linked. And so when we look to things very, very far away, we're looking back in time. So that is, yeah, exactly like using a time machine to go back to that time period.
We're talking to Dr. Ryan Ogliori, an astrophysicist at Washington University. And as I mentioned, we just passed the 2-year operational anniversary of the James Webb Space Telescope. But tell us, where is this telescope actually positioned? I mean, we've seen photographs of Hubble and photographs of when the people went up with the space shuttle to repair it. But where is James Webb located?
Yeah, so James Webb is not close to us like Hubble. So if it breaks, we can't fix it. It's at what's called a Lagrangian point. And so it's where the gravitational forces kind of balance, but it's not a stable balance. And so James Webb has to keep its orbit kind of close to that Lagrangian point. The rocket that took it there did a pinpoint landing, essentially, of the telescope in that spot. And so it will stay there for a nice long time. So it's far enough away that we can't fix it like we did with Hubble when we essentially corrected its optics. So it's a bit farther away. It's very cool, which is necessary to see this infrared light that we're interested in.
But that's about a million miles. That Lagrange point is about a million miles from the Earth, isn't it?
That's right. Yes, very far away.
Right. I just want to make sure that folks don't think it's just, oh, it's just, a, you know, in the next orbital belt or something. It's pretty far away, which in of itself to me is fascinating that we placed a space telescope in space, in orbit, a million miles from the Earth, and we're using that to see into hundreds of millions of years into the past. It's amazing science going on here, isn't it, Doctor?
Yeah, it's incredible. And it's an engineering victory for sure. Like this thing had to unfurl itself way out there. And there are so many things that can go wrong. And space is so hard because we can't replicate the conditions here on Earth like an engineer would want to do. So you send these things out like landing a rover on Mars. You know, you can't replicate that landing here on Earth. And you have to do your best and see if it works. And it's really shocking to think about how this worked essentially flawlessly. It's amazing.
Well, and I want to change topics for a moment, because the last time we spoke, you and I had talked about something called Project Prometheus that you are working on and pitching to NASA. To me, this is amazing. Tell us about this Project Prometheus.
Yeah, so we are hoping to return samples to Earth from one of Jupiter's moon. It's volcanic moon Io. So if you look, my main thing is thinking about the planets and what we've learned from bringing samples back from the planets and the moons in the solar system has really revolutionized our understanding. Like we brought samples back from the moon and we knew then that the Earth and the Earth formed from the moon colliding with a Mars-sized body 4 billion years ago. It's really shocked and revolutionized our understanding of the solar system.
Yes.
So we want to go out to the Jupiter system and bring fly through a volcano on Io. Sounds dangerous, and it is, and bring back essentially ash to Earth to study in the labs.
Well, I remember back in February that a NASA probe called Juno flew, I think it was a little less than 1,000 miles away from Io, and snapped some amazing pictures of these volcanic plumes. So is that the focus of your Project Prometheus at WashU?
That's right. Yeah. And we're named Prometheus after the Prometheus plume on Io, which is a volcano. You can think of like the fire fountains in Hawaii ejecting, but they're much bigger. They go up to 75 miles high. And this one's been going at least since 1980 and probably hundreds of years before that. So this one, it's kind of the old faithful of Io, and it's called Prometheus. So we're hoping to sample from that one. But if another one is active at the time, we can sample from that as well or instead. So there's always, 10 of these things going off on Io at the same time. It's an amazing volcanic world in the outer solar system.
And just so we're clear, Doctor, we're going to wrap this up, but just so we're clear, then your project, if approved, would not only study that ash, but bring it back to Earth for additional study.
Yes, and so we can measure isotopes with part per million precision. We basically know nothing about how planets formed in the outer solar system, if you ask me, because we don't have a sample. And this, I would do the same thing as if, what we learned about the moon by bringing the Apollo samples back. It'll change completely our understanding of the outer solar system.
Wow. Last question, Dr. Oglioli. How long would it take, if this project gets approved, how long would it take to travel from Earth to Io, collect the data, and then bring it back?
It would take, 6 years there, 3 years around the Jupiter system, and then 3 years back if we're using the Falcon Heavy recoverable, and maybe some people have seen the Falcon Heavy land those boosters on the ground.
Wow.
If we can pay a little more and use the Falcon Heavy expendable, which uses all the fuel and dumps the boosters in the ocean, we can get to Io in 3 years. Which sounds good to me because none of us are getting any younger. So we'll see about that.
Dr. Ryan Oglioli, astrophysicist at Washington University. Thank you, my friend, for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to us here today on KMOX.
Yes, thank you. Anytime.
We will be in touch.